It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The Democrats accomplished an historic first, winning back the U.S. House of Representatives from the Republicans while losing seats in the U.S. Senate. So, was there a blue wave or not? And with the Democrats back in control of the House, what does that mean for President Trump's agenda? How'd the results of congressional races surprise you, if at all, and why? Do you think national policies will change now? How will that happen? Did you vote Republican in 2016, but independent, libertarian, or Democrat Democratic in this election? Why? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lily Gorin joins us. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Good morning, Lily. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
It's nice to be on with you today, John.
So let's go over the results. Democrats won the House. Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate. Break down those numbers for us.
Well, we're still counting votes in a lot of places, but it's looking like the Republican pickup of at least 3 to 4 seats in the Senate, with the Democrats losing those seats, but picking up one seat in the race in New Mexico, I believe. And then in the House, it looks to be around at least 30 seats that the Democrats picked up. I believe they needed 23 to take the majority. But again, there's still some races where there's ballots being counted.
And the Democrats were in kind of a tough spot because they had to defend a number of Senate seats that were in states that were pretty red that President Trump had taken in 2016. So it was always going to be a little iffy whether they could make any advances in the Senate or even hang on to what they had. What does that suggest to us about what may be coming in the next election 2 years from now, and how the Senate seats will play out then? Who has to defend what?
Well, there's a lot of strategists on both sides who, sort of talked about the Senate map for Democrats in 2018 being one of the most difficult to defend in the sort of history of direct election of senators. And so they did lose seats in places like Missouri. Claire McCaskill lost her two terms there. Joe Donnelly lost in Indiana. But you did see people like Joe Manchin, a fairly conservative Democrat, hold on to a seat in West Virginia, which is really, I think, what the most Trump state in the 2016 election. So you do see sort of some of the sort of de-aligning of Democrats in fairly Trump-liking or Trump-enthusiastic states, Republican states. And so that's the 2018 map. The 2020 map is one that strategists on both sides, again, are suggesting will be similarly difficult for some Republicans to defend a number of their Senate seats when that election rolls around.
All right. Well, what about state governorships and legislatures?
Well, we saw a number of, governors' offices change hands, it seems, also in the state of Wisconsin, which I'm sure we'll be talking about. But you saw a number of governors, 3 moderate Republicans who held on to their offices, but a number of Republican losing bids in places like Kansas, but winning bids in places like Florida. And I believe the Georgia election has still not been called.
Yeah, what can these results tell us about how people across the country are feeling and what it is they want in the coming years?
I would probably be not a very good political scientist if I had a direct, clear answer to that right now, because I think it's a somewhat of a muddled message. In a lot of ways, there is a sort of request or an admonition that members of the House and the Senate possibly, pay attention to what is going on in the Trump administration, possibly holding the Trump administration accountable. But there's also a reflection on, Trump's campaigning in the last couple of weeks and places where Trump enthusiastic voters and also candidates won, like people like DeSantis in Florida. So it's not a totally clear message, I think.
Well, it rarely is totally clear, and I'm not blaming you at all for hedging on it, because this was kind of a muddle, as you say. What was the biggest surprise to you in these midterms?
I mean, I think part of what was interesting that I've been looking at, and, you know, I talked to my students about, is the voter turnout. And we don't have full numbers on voter turnout, but the early voting numbers just in and of themselves were up rather significantly in a lot of places like Texas. You saw that very contested Senate seat between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz, and Beto O'Rourke coming within, I think, 3 or 4 percentage points of Ted Cruz, and of course, raising an astronomical amount of money in that race. And so, part of what you sort of are seeing are unexpected candidates like O'Rourke having, you know, very good nights, not necessarily winning, but having kind of an interesting night politically. And then you have people like Tammy Baldwin, who won her Senate seat with close to, I think, 10%, and Amy Klobuchar, just in our neighbor's state, who won her Senate seat with like 22%. And so, you know, in states that, in Wisconsin, that voted for Trump in 2016, and in Minnesota, that, you know, was just 3 or 4 percentage points not in Trump's column in 2016. So some of these sort of wins are interesting in looking at, you know, what else is going on in other states where, you know, Claire McCaskill, as I said, lost her seat, and the Senate race, Nelson lost his seat in Florida to a Republican. And so you have, you know, some different things going on in different parts of the country.
Well, later on this morning, we will be talking about the record numbers of women who ran, and many
Absolutely.
Of whom won, and we will be spending quite a bit of time talking about that a bit later on. How has President Donald Trump responded to the election results? Does he think he won, lost? What was his thinking here?
He said that he won, that everyone won. He called a lot of the Republicans who he had been stumping for, who won their elections last night, but he also called Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell. And so, you know, Trump saying that the Republicans holding on to the Senate and, in fact, expanding their numbers in the Senate is a big win for him. And again, the Senate does a lot of work with the president in terms of confirming judges and confirming his appointments to cabinet positions. There's anticipation of some cabinet shakeups. And so the Senate being in firm Republican control is an asset with regard to that. But having a House that is, you know, in the majority to the other party may be problematic in moving any agenda items forward.
Well, and the candidates who won, who really supported Trump, are going to be even more in his column now, because they may feel they owe him their political career. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you'll see in both the House and the Senate, but particularly probably more so in the House, is that the Republicans who won in the House, who kept their seats, tend to be more aligned with Trump, and there are fewer moderates. There, you know, the idea of a moderate on either side of the aisle, but particularly with regard to, you know, allegiance to Trump, there are fewer of them.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. We're talking about the national implications of the midterm election results. You can join us with your take on this at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Stay tuned. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, the midterm election ads are over. Now it's time to talk about what the election itself meant. Did the results of congressional races surprise you? Why? Do you think national policies will change now? And how will that happen? Did you maybe vote Republican in 2016, but switch your vote for this election? And why did that happen? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lily Gorin is with us in this segment. She is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Let's go to the phones. Ed joins us from West Dallas. Ed, good morning.
One of the biggest trends last night, especially in this state of Wisconsin, is the effectiveness of organized labor. And if Mr. Trump thinks he's going to have his big Midwestern wall to help him in 2020, he better look at the election results last night, where we reelected Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, got rid of the biggest union hater and union buster in Scott Walker, elected a Democratic governor in Illinois, and elected a Democratic governor in Michigan, and reelected Sherwood Brown in Ohio, and that Ohio governor's race was fairly close.
All right, Ed, thanks. Lily Gorin, was this a victory for labor?
Well, I mean, it's probably one that will be reflected as such, in part because a lot of labor unions were out also campaigning and advocating for the election of people like Tony Evers. But again, you saw some interesting things in the Midwest, specifically where we are. You did see a number of Democrats take hold of offices that had been held by Republicans, and you sort of do have this sort of discussion of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin as the states that had helped Trump become elected president in 2016, and you're seeing larger Democratic voices at the state level and also in the sort of federal elections coming out of those states, and so that this is a contested area likely for the 2020 election that labor unions may also be again playing a role in.
800-642-1234. Ed, thanks for your call. You could be next. What did you think about the results of congressional races last night? And do you think this will change national policies? And if so, how? Or maybe you think it won't? And why do you feel that way? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. This wasn't exactly the blue wave Democrats were hoping for, was it? Can you tell us why?
Well, I mean, the Democrats had hoped that they would be able to take the Senate, or at least hold the Senate where it was, and, you know, possibly pick up a couple of the other governor's offices. But at the same time, the move in the House, where a number of seats are considered to be quite gerrymandered, is one where the Democrats did have a very good night, and that the number of people who voted for Democrats, and when we see the full totals, may be 6 or 7 million more than voted for Republicans overall. And so that's, part of what is considered to be a wave, perhaps, or maybe not a wave. And there's a lot of discussion about possibly not using this terminology anymore among political scientists.
Well, yeah, probably a good idea. When we think about campaign strategy, was it the Democrats weren't progressive enough in those races they didn't win, or that they were too progressive?
Well, I mean, I think, again, when you start looking at the Senate map, the Senate map was a very tough map for Democrats to hold seats. And, when I look at races like, again, specifically, I've already mentioned Claire McCaskill's race, where she'd won a election and reelection. This was her third run. And Missouri, which had, has sort of been a kind of old school Democratic state for quite some time, but is a fairly rural state. And what you're seeing in the sort of results from last night's elections and 2016's election is a real sort of continuing divide between rural America and sort of urban and suburban America. And so that is, I think, part of what was pronounced in last night's results in lots of ways.
What does a House majority mean when you don't have a majority in the Senate and you have a Republican president with veto power?
Well, you know, again, it's a question of whether pieces of legislation that are coming from the White House will make it through the House. If Trump, who has on occasion been known to be a transactional president, wanting to do deals, as he says, and whether he will do deals with, you know, a Democratic majority in the House in order to get legislation that he wants passed, you know, with the Senate in his favor. But I think part of what you'll likely see moving forward is that a lot of the Democrats who will be committee chair people, men and women, will be some investigations of various aspects of the Trump administration and other people in the Trump administration.
Yeah, we're already seeing stories about how we are going to eventually see President Trump's tax returns, for example. Has control of the House ever flipped without the winning party gaining Senate seats? And what are your thoughts on that?
I think that this is a historical first. I could be wrong, and I didn't spend the night combing through my history of the Senate and the House in this regard, but I do think that is a first, a historical first.
What is it, what does it mean?
Well, I mean, I think it, again, sort of signifies some of the polarization in the United States and that some of these fissures that I was just mentioning, when you start looking at the breakdown of the voters, too, that you saw Democratic women or women voting more Democratic. So you have some of this, you know, so-called gender gap, but you also have this sort of educational divide that people with college educations, according to all of the demographic surveys, tend now to vote Democratic, and people who do not have a college education tend to vote Republican. And so, again, you have this sort of divides around demographics, divides around gender, and you know, I'm sure that the data will also show us divides around race as well.
So is polarization an effective campaign strategy then, and could Republicans' performance in these elections make Trump even bolder?
It's very possible. And again, there was a lot of discussion before the election that if the House had not gone to the Democrats and the Senate, likely was going to go to the Republicans, that would have in fact made Trump bolder in both his rhetoric and what he pursues as his agenda. Whether or not that will be the case, given the flip in the House, we have yet to see. But he is holding a press conference, I believe, this morning, and he doesn't hold a lot of them. And so even there, you have some perhaps change in his behavior, perhaps. But I'll be interested to see what he says at his press conference.
Let's hear what Karen and Spooner has to say next. Karen, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm very concerned about the voter suppression that has happened in so many of the states, and the fact that the Democrats are able to win at all, like in Wisconsin, given the gerrymandering that's happened over, the Walker administration, is pretty remarkable. I hope that the House goes to work on resolving these issues. They did not do it after Obama was elected, and I thought that was flawed. That they did not get to work on the voter suppression. And I really think that we have to do something now. But I also think even though O'Rourke did not win, that we have an idea of what may happen in 2020.
All right. Karen, thanks for joining us this morning. Lily Gorin?
I mean, there's a lot of discussion about issues around voter suppression. This is particularly acute, it looked like, in Georgia. And, you know, the race there, it's too close to call for the governor's office. And the person running as a Republican, Mr. Kemp, is the Secretary of State. And there was a lot of discussion and a lot of lawsuits that had been filed and continue to be filed there. And so some of what you saw last night was around the issue of voter suppression. Suppression or voter access. Interestingly, in Florida, one of the ballot initiatives was to reinstate the voting rights of former felons, and that won.
Yeah, and it won, and it wasn't even close.
Right. And it had to reach over 60% of the vote, I believe. And so that has the likelihood to reinstate the voting rights for, I think, over at least a million people in Florida. And so there, you know, some of the ballot initiatives were also about having commissions drawing the congressional maps in other states. So there were a number of ballot initiatives about making sort of voter access easier. But there are also a lot of this discussion in, I think, North Carolina. And also Georgia with regard to issues around voter suppression.
Lily Gorin, we are out of time.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate you getting up and coming into our Milwaukee studios for this discussion this morning.
Happy to do so.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. Up next, we'll be talking about U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin's re-election victory over challenger State Senator Leah Vukmir. What do you think of that race? We want to know. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The gubernatorial race has been called for Tony Evers, but Governor Scott Walker hasn't conceded yet. The race for Attorney General doesn't have a clear winner. Meanwhile, Republican Brian Stile has claimed victory in the 1st Congressional District, and incumbent Glenn Grothman is among the winners. He won in the 6th Congressional District. Those are just a few of the results. In addition, Tammy Baldwin has been reelected to the U.S. Senate, defeating GOP challenger Leah Vukmir in the 2018 midterms. What do the results of this race tell us about the Wisconsin electorate 2 years into President Trump's tenure? Did the results in the Baldwin-Vukmir race surprise you at all, and why? Who did you vote for? Why? What policies were most important to you when you made that decision? What political party do you consider yourself part of, and how do you want U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin to represent you in Washington, D.C.? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater and is director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Susan, welcome to The Morning Show.
Good morning, John.
Let's break down the numbers. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin defeated challenger Leah Vukmir by picking up 55% of the vote. How should we think about that margin?
Well, I think it was quite a healthy margin, given the fact that, as you mentioned at the top of the show, we've got an attorney general's race that is still not decided and a governor's race that ended up quite close. So her win of about 11 percentage points, I think, is quite significant.
Well, and especially if you look at a map of Wisconsin, which outside of Madison, Milwaukee, and some scattered cities in northern Wisconsin, like Eau Claire and Superior, the map of Wisconsin looks pretty red with some blue splotches in it. Did people in different parts of the state vote as you expected?
I would say so. I'm looking at a map right now, and so I can see those same blue splotches in certain places and then lots of red, and that's not surprising. I mean, remember, some of those blue spots, Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area, the Madison area, are where the population centers are for the state, so you don't have to win the geography, you just got to win more votes. And so what we saw was Tammy Baldwin do very well in Democratic areas in the state, and then also, you know, pick up more votes than you would expect most Democrats to pick up in the rest of the state.
And in her victory speech, Senator Baldwin said, 2 years ago, people wouldn't have expected us to be here. Is that true? Was Baldwin that much of a long shot?
Well, I think given the fact that Donald Trump won Wisconsin surprisingly in 2016, and Scott Walker had won re-election, you know, fairly easily 2 years before, people were suggesting that perhaps Wisconsin was shifting from more of a purple state to more of a red state, and that Tammy Baldwin might not be successful in winning re-election. Also, she was originally slated to be one of the Republicans' top targets in 2016. That ended up not happening. In 2018. And that ended up not happening because the Republicans focused their efforts elsewhere, and also because early polling suggested that she was going to be successful. But I think that absolutely she was correct in saying that.
So was part of this because of the kind of rough primary that the Republicans had, and whoever would have come out of that race would have had some damage to control to do?
I think that's part of it. I think that we had, as you mentioned, kind of a bruising primary where the Republicans were going after each other and focusing a lot of their attention, obviously, on each other. Tammy Baldwin not having a significant challenge in the primary, instead was able to focus on her general election message beginning much sooner, and was also able to craft a message that she felt would be appealing to the entire state of Wisconsin, and didn't really have to run to the left as you often do as a Democrat when you're facing a primary challenger.
Let's take a phone call here. Katie joins us from Janesville. Katie, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning to you also. My comment is, it's not red, it's not blue, it's blue. And Wisconsin proved that again last night. We are fiercely independent. Myself, I don't vote party. I sometimes vote red. I sometimes vote blue. I will write in. I will do my homework. If you've been an incumbent for more than three terms, I normally vote against you just because I think there should be a turnover. Wisconsin votes the person, and the results don't surprise me.
All right, Katie, thank you.
Got some work to do.
All right, Katie, thank you. Thank you for your call. And Susan, what do you think of what Katie had to say?
I think Katie makes an important point, and I think speaking specifically to the Baldwin race, what Tammy Baldwin did very purposefully was make herself Wisconsin's senator. And so she has never been one to want to create a very high national profile. She is always focused on the kinds of issues that she believes affect Wisconsin as a whole. So she was present in all of Wisconsin's counties, speaking to voters throughout the state, and really tried to hone in on the kinds of issues that are key for everyone in the state. And in that regard, she received a lot of support from people who otherwise likely voted for Scott Walker for governor for, you know, policy reasons that would be at odds with what Tammy Baldwin supports.
Well, and it's also a state that has elected Ron Johnson to the Senate twice.
Right. Yes. And so again, in 2016, he was reelected. You know, somewhat surprisingly, I think people thought that in that race, Feingold would stage a grand comeback. And so, yeah, she had been an island, a Democratic island in the state for the past few years, and not so much anymore, though.
After she won, Senator Baldwin listed some different issues, some that you talked about. The first thing she mentioned was fighting for health care. How big a difference did health care make in the vote, do you think?
I think it made a very big difference. It's interesting because for Democrats across the country, the albatross that had been healthcare in prior elections actually was a net positive for Democrats. And I would say for Tammy Baldwin, that certainly was the case. And running on issues related to protecting pre-existing conditions and providing healthcare to people across the state, Leah Vukmir was criticized quite strongly for her stand on issues related to healthcare, and particularly in regard to pre-existing conditions. And in fact, I think at one of her final campaign events, she made a reference to something about, you know, standing in front of a bus or something like that before she would ever allow pre-existing conditions to coverage for pre-existing conditions ever be taken away from. But the Democrats in both the governor's race and in the Senate race were able to really focus on that healthcare pre-existing condition issue and expanding coverage for Wisconsin citizens to their benefit.
Democratic United States Senator Tammy Baldwin won re-election last night over her Republican challenger, Leah Vukmir. We're talking about the race with Susan Johnson, director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. And with you, if you care to join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Mineral Point. Mark, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Yeah, good morning. Well, first of all, I think that just in terms of the realities of the vote, all of the statewide offices will be in the hands of the Democratic candidates. The Attorney General's race is close, but I think in the end they will all go to the Democratic candidates. I think two lessons from this. One is that the control of Wisconsin, political control of Wisconsin by special interest billionaires is coming to an end. The Koch brothers have had their grand experiment and they failed last night. The other thing is that the failure of the popular vote to be reflected in the seats in the legislature is additional proof that the redistricting that was done 9 years ago, whenever it was, that I guess it was 2011, that is really continuing to have a corrupting effect on our state.
Okay, Mark, a lot to chew on there. Susan, let's start with the point about the Koch brothers and out-of-state billionaires. Tammy Baldwin actually referenced that in her victory speech.
Yes, she did, and she referenced the fact that, again, she had been a big target of the Koch brothers and other people from out-of-state focusing in on that race. Tammy Baldwin outraised Leah Vukmir in terms of contributions to her Senate campaign quite handily, almost four times as much or more. However, and that's not an accurate picture of spending in the race. And so if you look at the outside spending, we had a lot of outside spending on the Republican side targeted towards supporting Leah Vukmir.
Yeah, and we may never know the full extent of all the money that was contributed or spent there, but there was certainly a lot of it, just given the amount of mailers that people saw in their mailboxes and so forth. Senator Baldwin said it's important to support dairy farmers with trade deals and to reward workers by giving them a seat at the table. What was she alluding to there?
Well, I was looking at some of the exit poll results last night, and when people were asked about the impact of some of the trade decisions that President Trump has made of late and what impact they had, it was a very high percentage of voters who indicated that they had had a negative impact by some of the deals that President Trump had made in regard to trade and some of the decisions. And I mean, dairy is one of them, and President Trump actually pushed pretty hard on that in regard to Canada, but there's other issues for other farmers throughout the state of Wisconsin that have been negatively impacted by some of the decisions that President Trump has made in regard to tariffs. And so Tammy Baldwin made that kind of a key part of her campaign for re-election.
Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater and director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Our conversation about the re-election of Tammy Baldwin to the U.S. Senate will continue. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network of WPR. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. More election results. Tony Evers elected governor, although Scott Walker has not yet conceded. The Attorney General's race doesn't have a clear winner yet. Incumbents Ron Kind, Sean Duffy, Gwen Moore, and Jim Sensenbrenner head back to Congress. U.S. Representative Mark Pocan joins him, but his race was uncontested. Right now, though, we're talking about Democratic United States Senator Tammy Baldwin, who won re-election last night over Republican challenger Leah Vukmir, with Susan Johnson. She's director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. Yeah, the results in last night's race surprise you at all, and why? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We want to hear from you regardless of who you supported. If you supported Leah Vukmir, what did you think when you saw the results, and were you surprised by it? What do you think going forward about the things going forward? Speaking of Leah Vukmir, Susan, after Senator Vukmir's loss last night, she acknowledged it was difficult for her and for her supporters, and she said she wouldn't change anything. Should she have adjusted her strategy, or was this campaign exactly what she needed to do as Baldwin's Republican challenger?
Well, I think that it's hard, you know, to play Monday morning quarterback, but that's what we do. I think that she quite early on decided to attach herself to President Trump and ran a campaign that I would say is in the mold to a certain degree of President Trump. She came up with nicknames for Tammy Baldwin. You know, Princess Painkiller was one of them that came out of late in a tweet. And so I think that she was quite aggressive. And the fact of the matter is that as the polling consistently showed her being down, sometimes when you're a challenger and you're down as much as she was in the polls, you have to go into attack mode, because that's what people would be telling you might be helpful in drawing away some of the votes from people who might be saying they're supporting Baldwin, but might be wavering a little bit.
Well, and State Senator Vukmir was not initially a supporter of candidate Donald Trump, but in this campaign, she hooked her wagon to his pretty closely. He campaigned for her. So did Vice President Pence. Trump administration, very visible in the state of Wisconsin. Did that help her or not?
Well, I would probably argue that given that President Trump's approval ratings in Wisconsin have consistently been going down, and they were lower going into the election, and the fact that we saw Democrats doing better in Wisconsin and Tammy Baldwin polling so well, I mean, I guess we could argue that, in fact, Trump's support didn't necessarily help her in any way, but I don't know that it cost her the election. I think that there are other factors that came into play, and this Senate race wasn't necessarily about Donald Trump.
What can Leah Vukmir's loss tell us about where Wisconsin is politically right now?
Well, I think that, you know, looking at the totality of the results from yesterday, I think that people are going to want to talk about a resurgent Democratic Party. And I think to a certain degree we can have that conversation, but it's just one election. And so I wouldn't argue necessarily that Wisconsin is going to be blue from here on out. We still have, Republicans who are quite in control in terms of some of the legislative offices.
Yeah, we're talking about Wisconsin U.S. Senate race with Susan Johnson. She's director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin won re-election last night over Republican challenger Leah Vukmir. We're wondering what you think about that, regardless of who you supported. Let us know, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is our email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Susan, is Wisconsin following a national trend here? How do we compare to other Senate races in purple states that voted for Donald Trump 2 years ago?
Well, what we saw was that, and again, as expected, the Republican Party did fairly well, some would say quite well, in states where the president won in 2016. So we had Republican pickups in the Senate, across the map. We had in Indiana, Missouri, as two states that are close by, North Dakota, another state that was close by. And so as far as the Senate goes, the Republicans are going to pick up a few seats, but that was pretty well expected. I would say if we think, bigger picture in the Midwest, the Democrats did quite well across the board, picking up some governor seats and then also picking up some Senate seats or holding some Senate seats.
And turnout was exceptionally high for a midterm election. What do you think was driving that?
I think that there was motivation, a lot of motivation on both sides in this case. And so some of the turnout numbers were, as you mentioned, really high, and also early voting numbers were very high, which also indicates a lot of enthusiasm. And I think that for Democrats in Wisconsin, they saw, looking at some of the polling numbers, that they had chances that they maybe not had had in 2016. And so there was a little extra motivation there. And so when you couple that extra motivation and the other side really pushing hard that they needed to get their voters out too, we saw turnout numbers that we rarely see in midterm elections.
We had a call from Carolyn Racine, who called in to say that political ads influenced her decision in the end. She was surprised that candidates really approved some of their own ads, in particular some of Leah Vukmir's ads. Was this a particularly rough campaign in terms of the ads that candidates put out themselves? Forget about the third-party ads.
Yeah, I think that every election cycle, we feel like we've seen the point of no return, and then we see something worse the next election cycle. And I think that in this current environment that we're existing in, where politics is just increasingly more negative, and we hear people complaining so much about the ads, but the ads continue to get more negative. And you're right, not only from the outside groups. I mean, historically, we would consider the most negative ads to come from the outside groups, and then the candidates themselves could sort of say, hands off, I didn't do that. Those were my supporters. But what we're seeing more and more are the candidates themselves, you know, having that tagline, I approve this ad, and it's quite a dark and negative ad.
So what made Wisconsin's campaign different this time around, do you think? Were the strategies different? What was going on here?
Well, I mean, again, I think that we are in a different environment. I think coming out of 2016, a lot of Democrats in the state of Wisconsin were quite disappointed to see Wisconsin go for Donald Trump, much to, you know, everyone's surprise. And you have Scott Walker, who was running for a third term in governor, and there were some people who were arguing that, you know, maybe two terms was enough, and his approval numbers weren't as high as they had been in the past. And again, speaking to the Senate race, you had Tammy Baldwin, who ran a very localized Senate race and really did her best to connect with the voters of Wisconsin, each one, and that ended up working out quite well for her, obviously.
We've only got about a minute left, Susan. Whether they voted for Baldwin or cast their ballot for Vukmir, what should people in Wisconsin do to ensure U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin represents their interests in the nation's capital?
I would say keep letting her know what your positions are on the issues. She's been someone, again, who's gone around the state, listened to voters, has been responsive to voters, has tried to run, some might argue with this, but a more moderate course in the Senate. And so I would say if you were a Vukmir supporter, keep contacting Senator Baldwin's office and make sure she knows how you feel about different issues.
Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater. She is also director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research there. Susan, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Always happy to do it.
Our election analysis continues next on The Morning Show as Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson joins us. Democrat Tony Evers says he's confident he's the next governor of Wisconsin. Incumbent Republican Scott Walker says some votes still need to be counted. We'll talk about that and results of the Attorney General's race up next. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think, how you feel, and where we go from here. I'm John Munson. You are listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.